Hey, Michelle Cederberg here with my good friend and speaking colleague, Jennifer Buchanan. Let me tell you a little bit about this amazing person before I tell you why we're here. Jennifer Buchanan witnessed the power of music as a young teen when her granddad had his second stroke, which left him unable to speak and walk. Her granny asked Jennifer to bring her guitar to the hospital and sing his favorite song. And as she sang, she watched the face of the grumpy old man she thought she knew turn into the tears of a man who wanted more meaningful connection. And that moment was the beginning of her journey to becoming a music therapist. Now, Jennifer has combined her music therapy experience with an MBA and is the founder and visionary architect of JB Music Therapy, a Calgary-based music therapy company that has been instrumental in the implementation of hundreds of music therapy programs throughout Canada. I wouldn't be surprised if some of my listeners have used this wonderful company in their long-term care homes, et cetera. Her company has been nominated 3 times for the Community Impact Award by the Calgary Chamber of Commerce, and this year they are celebrating 30 amazing years in business. Now, Jennifer is also the executive director of the Canadian Association of Music Therapists. I give her a hard time because she is the busiest person I know. She's an award-winning music therapist and a 3-time author of 2 award-winning books, one of which is Tune In That I Do Not Have, Wellness Incorporated, which you can see I've got tagged up, and her just-released new book, Wellness Well Played, The Power of a Playlist. And it's this book that we're going to be talking with Jennifer about today. So thank you for being here, Jennifer. Welcome, welcome, welcome in all your spare time.
Oh, Michelle, I adore you. And I hope everyone sees that, you know, this is mutual admiration
really as is.
I've got your book behind me on that shoulder. And of course, you have inspired me so much in my work and my business that you just talked about.
Love, so, love, love. So I spent a good part of yesterday reading this book. And yeah. I was super excited to talk to Jennifer because from the moment I started reading it, there's one word that came to mind and it's nostalgia, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just kept thinking back about the power of music in my life. So let's talk about that a bit.
Well, and you know what's interesting is you and I have so much in common. One is our age, and that we're both Gen Xers, and that we both remember the cassette. We probably both remember 8 tracks in the car, even when we were little.
Oh gosh. The nostalgia piece right there, I'll stop you, because at the beginning of the book, Jennifer gives the history of music, essentially, and how we curate music from cassettes to CDs to downloadable MP3s and all of that kind of stuff. And it was the cassette tape, Jennifer, at the beach at Wanak Lake when I was a teenager, waiting for that song to come on the radio to press record and play at the same time. I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
I so know what you're talking about. And this is ultimately where the book came from. So if we recall in early 2020, the first thing that began to happen once we knew that the world was changing forever, that we started going on social media and we were seeing people sing. We were seeing them in Italy singing from their patios, and they were singing songs that everybody knew.
To music pull people together when we were apart. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we also went into our homes. Many of us were not in our homes normally this much. And we started listening to our music again. And this concept of the power of a playlist has been something that I've been using in my work for 30 years. But it really was this last couple of years now where the impact of that and how what a meaningful difference it makes in our lives. And as you're saying, the nostalgic part, like what does that actually do for us?
Yeah. Well, and I was just thinking back to all of the ways music has impacted me in my life and how it does today. And it occurred to me because I make playlists now for my cycle classes and they are bang, 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 energizing playlists that I freaking love. And my cycle participants love them. But I realize I don't make playlists for the rest of my life anymore. So that was my big awareness because I had, you know, in my 20s and my 30s, I had my breakup playlist that I would put on when I wanted to feel melancholy and when I wanted to cry. And if there was a song that was too upbeat, it didn't make the list because I just wanted to feel sad, right? I remember my brother having a skiing playlist that he had on a cassette that he put in his Sony Walkman. And then he'd put on his headphones going down the ski hill, boom, 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 with his super long skis and his super speedy, you know. I just remember watching him, and I know what songs he was beating it out to as well, because, you know, I knew my brother.
Well, and you know, like, this is the point. The book is supposed to remind us of all those things. And we're really fortunate because we were like the creators, us Gen Xers of the mixtape, right? And putting this together, and as you were saying, pressing play and record simultaneously, and sometimes the record button was a little sticky and you missed the simultaneous part, so you had to do it again.
And what did we do? We stuck a pencil into the cassette and wound it back just enough to get that cue perfect for when the next song was going to get recorded.
Right. And when we think about that moment, so I remember you put a cassette together. Sometimes it would take days, an entire weekend to get all the songs you wanted on there. And then if you were really fortunate, you had dual cassettes, so you could make a couple of copies for your friends. Remember that? That was like amazing when we got that.
That's like the gift. Did you get mixtapes from your boyfriends?
Well, I was more on those breakup songs. It was all the boys I really liked, and then they never really liked me back. So I put together way too many sort of, I would have really liked
the melancholy mixes.
Totally.
So I got a mixtape from one boyfriend that we dated for a short while, and then I realized we're not meant to be together. So I broke up with him, and then he showed up on my doorstep with a mixtape that he'd made me to basically convince me that we needed to be together. Now, the unfortunate thing is it was an awesome playlist and he had exceptional taste in music, but he just wasn't the guy for me. I still wish I had that mixtape.
So even if he would have held the boombox up, Michelle, right? No.
Okay, so here's a question that I have, because I mean, we could wax nostalgic for hours. And I'm sure that my listeners are probably thinking back into their head of their past playlist, but I want to talk about present playlists and why are playlists and music in general so darn important?
You know, one of the things that I have found as I've worked with people around putting together their playlists is that, yes, you're curating your music, but you're also really curating your values. What's truly been important to you? What's important to you now? And what do you want to build into your future? And music, there's nothing more efficient and effective, I know, that gets to the root of those feelings of what we hope to have. And it can help with our aspirations and support us along this life's journey, our life's soundtrack, and become a real part of that. You and I were talking about just before we started about how playlists take time. And I mentioned this a few times in the book that when we start talking about how simple this is, it's truly simple, but it's not easy. And it does take time. There's a level of investment that needs to go into curating our music. And I believe that's where the meaning's going to come in when we do it.
Well, I think it just occurred to me while you were talking that one of the things I do is I have Shazam on my phone.
Yeah.
And every time I hear a song that kind of triggers me in a positive way, I press Shazam so I can record it. And at some point, I need to go back and create playlists out of some of those songs. And I do that for my cycle classes for sure. But because it's that feeling, right? It's that there's an energy change that happens in the body. And this is where the science geekery for me comes up. There's a chapter in the book called The Art and Science of the Playlist, right? Is that what it's called? The Art and Science of the Playlist?
Yep, that's it.
The Art and Science of Music. That's track two, which chapter two.
Right? Yeah, they're not called chapters.
They're called tracks. and you know, the geek, the science geek in me loved this because it didn't occur to me as much as I know about this kind of stuff, that why those good feelings were happening is because it was triggering a neurotransmitter hormonal response in the body. So say more about that.
Yeah, and you and I have a lot of this in common, because I know when I read through your book too, that we're looking at the, when we're looking at movement, when we're looking, and that direct context to mood as well. And it's very, very similar. So there's one area in that chapter I talk about how music is harmonious.
Hormonious.
Not just harmonious, but hormonious. And it's
you very, talked very about hormones as the body's internal Wi-Fi.
Right? Because that's where they land in our glands, they travel around our body, and they stimulate and trigger, like you're saying, but not only trigger, they anchor those feelings. So that's where all the moods and memories start connecting. Here's an example. When you are worrying, I don't even know if that's a word, but you know, when you're cycling over, so not cycling like on your bike, Michelle, but when we're actually cycling in our head and you are having a really hard time getting off of that, you keep coming back to it through the day. So you've woken up in the morning, you've got this thought in your head and it's not going away. And it's not necessarily an optimistic thought. It's one you're literally worrying about. And we know now that that's our, we have triggered that amygdala response. And yeah. So this tiny, tiny little piece in the brain. And
you're talking about worrying over something that you're stressed about. So it's the amygdala hijack.
Worrying.
It's like, oh my God, I'm obsessing. Yeah.
Right. What happens when we start talking about this nostalgia, or we listen to a song that brings back a different time of our life, unrelated to this worry of the moment? It's we immediately access this beautiful place in our brain called the hippocampus, which is where our warmth and creativity resides. And once we're there, we can settle there for a bit. It is really impossible for us to stay worrying if we're really deeply connected to this piece of music. From there, we can make our next best decision.
So you're saying that we should all have a stress management playlist.
We need a stress management playlist. And more importantly, instead of maybe calling it stress management, what is the feeling you aspire to have? That should be the name of our playlist. And here's one other really, this is a real top tip. So sometimes, for example, I'm really low at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, pretty much every day. That's my low. I'm up really, really early. I'm fired up in the morning. I can go, 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 go. I hit about 3, I hit about 4, and I'm feeling a bit lower. I used to think what I needed was energy. And so I put together an energy playlist, which is high pumping. And I found it made me more tired. I did some research around that. Research. And I wasn't allowing myself to decompress in order for me to refuel.
So your body's cortisol was already high and you were amping it up by listening to amped up music rather than I need to chill. I need to get those happy hormones and neurotransmitters working for me.
Exactly.
And one of the quotes from the book was from a neuroscientist and cognitive psychologist named Dan Levitin. And he said, the promise here is that music is arguably less expensive than drugs and it's easier on the body. Now, you're not suggesting that, you know, you don't get the medical care that you need.
Yeah, don't stop your meds. Right.
Yeah, but that music has a really important place in helping us feel better.
And you know, like I was saying at that 4 o'clock PM, so maybe I didn't need energy, but what I needed was that feeling of a hug. Yep. And music can do that as well. And that feeling of a hug, now we're releasing some oxytocin, that feeling of a bonding experience. But I'm by myself in my home, which I've been a lot of over these past couple of years, and music becomes my companion. And I believe that's exactly what Daniel Levitin was trying to say in his book, This Is Your Brain on Music, you know?
And I was going to ask you, how does science influence my playlist? But I think you sort of started to answer that. And, you know, after spending a couple of hours reading your book yesterday, then my husband left to go north for work, and I turned on music on my Google Play. So it was it's YouTube Music, and I just asked it to play, you know, a playlist, but none of the music was resonating with it with me because it wasn't my choice. It was just kind of what was coming on randomly, and it occurred to me at that point, it's like, I need to start making my home playlist. What do I want to be listening to when I'm making dinner? What do I want to be, you know, listening to when I need to chill or when I need to pick up my energy? And it occurred to me that that's part of how science influences. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. And, you know, even thinking about when we're separated from our loved ones, if we're wanting to feel more connected to our loved ones, we can also have a few songs on there that remind you of them as you listen to it. So they can still comfort you in some ways. And be a part of that playlist and still a part of your life when they're no longer close.
So I have the good, great honor of being in Jennifer's book. On page 43, she quoted my Success Energy book on how I talk about goals. You know, and basically why we should have goals when creating a playlist. So is there anything you want to say about that?
I think, did you say page 43, Michelle?
Page 43. I mean, of course I know where I am.
I love that, you know. Okay, so here we go. Because I'm actually going to read it out. Okay, are you ready? I'm going to read it out loud to the audience. I recognize you may have several whys for using music to de-stress, to boost your memory, to increase your productivity, to lessen your anxiety. Whatever your objective may be, just naming it will help. In her book, The Success Energy Equation, Michelle Cedar book puts it this way. When you set a goal, your attention is naturally drawn toward what you should do next. Your brain starts to look for ways to accomplish that goal, and you gain focus, which is an antidote to all the distractions and low priority tasks that compete for your attention every day. I love that. Cedarberg goes on to discuss goals in the most beautiful and musical way. If your goals don't resonate with you at a deeper level, it will be hard to stay connected to them. I love that.
Well, and I love that because I talk about goals being obviously resonant within you. And I love that, that's a musical term that just that resonated with
it was
you.
Perfect.
But it made sense to me. It's so interesting when I'm listening to you read my own words back to me, the power of a playlist. And I realized that the music that I was playing yesterday didn't resonate with me because it didn't have a connection to what I needed right then and there. It wasn't purposeful. Right. And I think you talk about the purposeful playlist.
And you can imagine that a lot of people that I'm working with, so I work predominantly, my company serves healthcare, and we see people going through some of the most difficult transitions and moments of their life. And it is all about, for that moment, what is their goal? And we see those goals shift. So when we're talking about goal setting for our music, keep in mind that those goals are also going to shift, and how we use music's going to change. And being available to that and knowing that it's going to support us is key.
And you put a whole list of them, naming your playlist goals for comfort, to reduce stress, to lessen anxiety, to improve mood, to find purpose. You had mentioned earlier in the book, you know, having that playlist that you play when you're going into an important meeting or the boardroom, or just need to be just dialed,
oh,
right?
Yeah. When you're holding
productivity,
Superman pose.
Superman playlist to boost creativity, to feel inspired, to strengthen relationships, for general self-care. And it didn't occur to me until I read that list. It's like, I need to make more playlists in my life again. I used to have them all the time.
Okay, so Michelle, here's the good news. This is going to be a new way to add art daily into your life. I know both of us love to journal. We love to write, obviously, because we're writing. But this is just one more way that we can add that creative process into our life that we know is good for our mental health and well-being. And is
particularly now, Jennifer, as we're kind of navigating the tail end of a pandemic that never ends, and there's stress and uncertainty and fear in everyone. And I think that's why this book and The Power of the Playlist is so darn important now. Wouldn't you agree? Well, you would agree, you wrote the book. So if people wanted to do a playlist, you know, like how do you break down the overwhelm of that for my listeners? Like to you know, to tell them you do have the time, or how can we do this, you know, without stress?
So the first playlist, and I know you just said break down the overwhelm. This one might be the biggest one, but I also feel it's the one that's going to help us the most with the context for future playlists. So it is your personal soundtrack. It is just getting out maybe three, four, five pieces of paper, and you can leave them out on the kitchen table or on anywhere on your counter, and put headers at the top of the pieces of paper. One is my earliest memories. One is my junior high memories. One is my high school, my young adulthood, today. Whatever you want to chronologically look at your life, have them out and begin to add music. Sometimes it's going to be entire albums. Sometimes it's going to be a voice or a singer that has meant so much to you for a reason. And just begin to put those out as if you're documenting your entire personal life through song. And that will eventually become that really big personal soundtrack that will be the basis for a lot of other episodic moments through your life, and then looking at the feelings of what you need today.
I can even just think about Fleetwood Mac or Billy Joel or Boston from when I was, you know, road trip playlist from when I was in university, right, and there. It just triggers emotions of, like, oh my gosh.
Totally.
Like,
you can remember who you were with. You can remember what car you were in. You can remember what the road looked like as you were driving by. You can remember
all
the colors.
It.
It's in Technicolor.
It's amazing. And it's ABBA amazing. When I was little, because my family's from Finland, so we had ABBA when we were little. It's like a new
you
old
had
song.
To have ABBA.
They're making a comeback. I love that. So like that to me makes me realize that I don't spend enough time kind of in that nostalgic era in the past. And I, you know, I often listen to the music that my husband puts on, and I think I need to change that. As much as I like his music, it's not always my music.
No. And you know who else is going through that? Parents of teenage kids. They're listening to all the music that their kids are listening to, but they often aren't turning on their own.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you do how much your teens, I don't have kids, but my friends' teens resonate with
totally
the oldies, although they're not considered oldies.
They do. They love the oldies too. Yeah.
Great. And so, we could talk about this for endlessly. I want to say to all of my listeners and viewers in this case, if you need a pick-me-up, if you need a kind of walk down nostalgia lane, if you want a wellness resource that is not only helpful but super fun, then I suggest that you pick up a copy of Jennifer's newly released Wellness Well Played, The Power of a Playlist. Jennifer, where can they find you? Where can they find the book?
They can find the book at your favorite retail online stores. They can go to wellnesswellplayed.com to connect directly with me and also get a list of where the books are.
You'll also get a signed copy if you go to wellnesswellplayed.com, will you not?
True.
I got a signed copy. Oh, thank you very much, Jen. We could talk about this endlessly. So if you have any questions at all, seek out Jennifer through the contents. I'll put some of the information in the notes below. And thanks for your time, Jennifer.
Thank you, Michelle.
I got to go curate my playlist now.
Have fun.
Should have had a soundtrack in the background while we were doing this. All right. Thanks, everybody. My name is Michelle Cederberg, reminding you, you've got one chance to do this life. I say dare to live it big and dare to do it with just a little bit more purposeful music in your life. That's going to be happening for me real soon.